pandemic got us into a reflective space and made us look inward to see what we can do for the world at large. As a self-expression coach, I became a catalyst for women and started Vani, a one-on-one coaching program for women on finding their voice, to speak up, to be visible. As a storyteller, I spotted there were many ordinary people amongst us leading extraordinary lives, making a difference to the world, and they needed to be heard. Thus was born You and I with Rashmi Shetty, where amazing personal journeys with their uniqueness and individuality are showcased. A reaffirmation of the fact, open your eyes wider, the world is far more beautiful when we acknowledge the presence of both you and I. Our guest today is Dr. Nandini Munkur, one of India's renowned developmental pediatricians who has done pioneering work in the field of early detection and intervention services for developmental disorders in the last four decades. She practiced as a general pediatrician during her early career while pursuing with a keen interest in the field of developmental studies, and is also a fellow of the American Academy of Cerebral Palsy and Developmental Medicine, FAACP and DM. She spearheaded the awareness building and creation of early intervention tools in the field of developmental pediatrics in India. She founded the Center for Child Development and Disabilities in 2006. The center has been treating children with a wide range of developmental problems in areas of physical, mental, language, and learning abilities from birth to adolescence. The center also runs a school that practices early intervention services for children. She has designed and released multiple initiatives to support her work and house these teams. As a director for the Sakamvit Trust, she has undertaken a program, Learn Math with Fun, via satellite for children across rural Karnataka. Dr. Nandini Munkur co-founded Tooth's Guide, a comprehensive online self-educated portal aimed to cater to the vision of helping every child with disabilities to attain a better future. She has focused her career on ensuring children with developmental disabilities have access to the best possible support and care. Listen in as she shares her journey from a little girl to the inspirational developmental pediatrician that she is today. Dr. Nandini Munkur, such an honor having you on You and I with Rashmi Shetty.
Thank you, Rashmi, for having me. Such a pleasure to be with you.
Ages since we caught up, and knowing the work that you do, I am always inspired every time we speak. So now, before we get to Dr. Nandini Munkur, we want to explore a little bit of the little Nandini, because you're so sprightly, full of life, always energetic. Were you like that as a little girl as well? What was your childhood like?
Rashmi, I was born in a service family. My father was in the Indian Air Force and he was an officer in the Indian Air Force. So three siblings we were. I lost my brother. So we have got two sisters, and we always traveled a lot because from big places posting to small little places, God forsaken. So I remember going to schools with some laborers' kids because there was no other school in a God forsaken place somewhere in Madhya Pradesh called Amla. So it's been a wonderful childhood I've had because there's been so much of exposure traveling around this country. And we grew up, you know, in a very cosmopolitan kind of atmosphere, and being in the services, it was full of plays and, you know, play games, go out and, you know, go to the mess and go learn ballroom dancing. We did everything possible as a kid. And I also went to I grew up in Delhi mainly because my father had a very prolonged posting in Delhi. And I remember most of my childhood from there, and until I went to med school, then I went off to the hostel. So my rest of my life was spent in the hostel till I got married and settled. So it's been, I went to the Air Force Central School and Bal Bharati School, which is the Air Force School. And I think it was a great fun, lots of sports to play. And I'm not a very sporty person though, but loved playing and was very fond of reading. We were very avid readers, and probably that came from my father. I mean, I remember my childhood of living in a small little, the hostel. It was called the Princess Park Hostel, where my father had small, and we used to walk to the Central Vista Mess then, which is no longer exists because you got huge little thing. All that is gone in Delhi now, and I'm talking in 50s. Huh? And just to go to the library to borrow a book every week. And I think that habit of reading was really, really, I don't know, which I still read. So that's the only, so we grew up playing and, a wonderful childhood playing tambola. I think we did everything. There was nothing like we didn't do, that was the best part. And not so bad in academics. Okay, we did quite well and was able to take an entrance exam and go into a med school on a merit seat was quite enjoyable. And I went to Maulana Azad Medical College. As I said, my childhood has been in North. And so I love learning languages. So I learned how to speak Urdu, Punjabi, though I'm a Tamilian by birth, and Hindi quite well. I did Hindi literature. So it's been a wonderful journey of, of fun and learning with no tension anywhere. So that's how my childhood has been, and my siblings were equally bright, and all of us really had a great time growing up. So what else can I tell you about my childhood?
Medicine was because you were inspired by someone, or it was just that every good student would do medicine or engineering and that's how?
I didn't know. Right from when I was young, I said, I want to be a doctor. I don't know who inspired. I don't think I was inspired by somebody. Maybe, I don't know, but maybe reading A.J. Cronin much later, but not at that time. We used to, much later, I read those lovely books. I think got inspired, I forget the author. Who wrote Doctor in the House and Doctor at Sea? And they were very cute.
Yeah,
books.
Yeah.
Richard Gordon, is it? I don't remember the authors very well, but that was much later. But I just wanted to do medicine, for reasons unknown. I thought I wanted to be a doctor. Probably because there were no doctors in the family at that time in my house, from my cousins and as far as I could think of. So I was one of the first qualified doctor. So that was the inspiration. I just wanted to be one, and luckily I got to do what I wanted to do.
Yeah, and moving into pediatrics as a branch was again out of interest. Any inspiration while you were studying medicine, your UG? How did you think of pediatrics?
Pediatrics happened that when I was doing, actually got inspired by my so-called registrars who are 3 years senior. See, when we got into pediatrics, it was just a special. Most of our professors were not qualified pediatricians. They all were MRCPs and all came from England. They were adult medicine who did pediatrics. And it was like doing pediatrics was, I did it out of choice because I did have a MD medicine seat also, but it was my, see, when I was doing we do something called house surgeonship, I did pediatrics and medicine. Those days we could do what, if you had the marks, you did what you want. There's nothing like it. So when I was doing pediatrics, the batch, which was like 3 years senior to me, which was a great registrar, they said, listen, we need to improve this branch, let's don't go to, there are millions of people doing medicine, everybody does, So in fact, I really got sucked into doing medicine because of my seniors and, it was, they said, it's very challenging. See, children can't speak and they'll cry. We have to decipher it. And it'd be great fun to understand infant toddlers, but it'd be tough also. And so it was that, frankly, that is the reason why I joined pediatrics, I think it was a great decision.
Yeah, because I have met a lot of pediatricians, and for my children, when I met you, I found you absolutely friendly with kids and very easy on the children, whether it was giving a vaccination shot or any kind of injection. You really were very friendly with the kids and you were doing it. So it seemed like your calling was just pediatrics.
Yeah, I think it was great fun. I think, one thing much later after doing developmental pediatrics, I realized the innocence they bring with them. Befriending them is so easy. Just say, okay, before you count three, I'll finish that was my standard thing. I'll finish, whoever finishes, if I don't finish my injection by three, then okay, I won't give it. It only takes a few seconds. By the time they say one, oh my God, I didn't even give it. We used to have all the games with them and they're so easy to please, so easy to be with, and they bring you such joy when they come. And I remember when I used to do general pediatrics, which was for a few years before I switched on to developmental pediatrics, kids would bring me chocolates, flowers. The older one will come with the younger one. I still remember some of the mothers will ring me up and say, listen, today I'm not coming. I'm sending you I say, yeah, send, no problem. So that I really enjoyed, more than anything, I think you should enjoy what you do. I enjoyed doing pediatrics with those kids, and it was great fun, with them too. They would come and I'd say, okay, and reading with them was fun. And later I was asked, a teenager, what are you, we didn't have, unfortunately in my era, there was no internet and there were no, Google and, television came much later, it came later in the 80s, but that we never had programs. We just saw a few cricket matches and a few other things, And then I'm also a great cricket fan. So we used to watch a lot of cricket, So it's been, as I said, good. And I'm very fond of playing cards. So now I've switched on from rummy to bridge, a little more better than playing that. It's not really a lot of bridge. So it's been good fun. I've enjoyed every aspect of fun in life.
Yes, because you come across as somebody who's extremely positive. While talking to you, there's so much of positivity that you exude, which automatically goes to the person who is sitting opposite to you. So from general pediatrics, what drew you into developmental pediatrics? Because you are now completely into child development with special needs children. How did all that actually branch out from general?
Rashmi, to be honest, when I started doing pediatrics, I was married and I had two children by the time. I was married very young. I was an intern when I got married. And by the time 1 year, I had my first daughter. So not very old. And one thing I wanted to be sure was, I didn't want to do too much of emergency medicine. I wanted to be with my children and I still did go for, cesareans and stuff like that because I had to do it. But I somehow thought that I should do a specialty which doesn't involve too much of my time, not only children, maybe because of the other interests also I wanted to. Could not be a practitioner who sat till 10 or 11 in the clinic and wanted to make money. That was never my intention. And second thing was that I had a roaring practice. As you know, Cash Pharmacy was my landmark clinic in Bangalore. And, I was doing very well in my practice. I had no, somehow, the children, the parents who used to come with these children with maybe those days with Down syndromes or severe, whatever reason, the children, they were so unhappy. They were, the distress. But I felt somewhere when these children would come, I had no clue what to tell the parents. They say, can my child go to a normal school and learn? And I said, the question was, I didn't know. There's very little emphasis in our training was given how to look after these kids. Probably there was so much of those days of my practice used to be a lot of rheumatic heart disease, tetanus. No, kids used to be dying of infectious diseases, left, right, and center, a lot of malnutrition. So, all the energy, I think, in training went in this. Nobody even thought about that they were far and few or what could be. And there were such a lot of social stigma in our country against the, you know, the children would, they would never bring them out, or they were housebound. Parents became so isolated because the society wouldn't interact. There was some curse on them when they had the children. We had all sorts of beliefs and a whole lot of customs. And I think I somehow felt a great empathy for these parents. I said, how is it possible that a human being cannot learn? Everybody can learn something. So can these children also learn? I had no clue what I'm going to do. But I just thought somewhere along, there should be something to be done in this field or specialty. At that time, 35 years ago, nobody even knew how to spell developmental pediatrics. It never just existed in our country at all, you know. And I thought I'm going to, my only source, you know, on, you know, we used to have to dial black phones, which you have to go to wait for the operator to connect you somewhere. You had no study material. The only source I wanted to improve my information on this was the British Council Library in Bangalore. At that time was situated in St. Mark's Road, you know, which is just near Koshi, just above Koshi's restaurant. I don't know, you're a Bangalorean, it's a very big landmark. Koshi is in St. Yes. Mark's Road, and the British Council Library was there. And yeah, it's hardly stone throw from Cash Pharmacy where I used to practice. And I used to practice only in the morning hours, and when my children were at school, I would finish by lunchtime and then spend an hour in the library to read. I then started reading. I started reading child psychiatry. I started reading child psychology, and got more and more intrigued that something, the mind of a person, whoever it is very difficult to decipher, and it is very fascinating. And by the time I was very well settled and didn't want to think of doing. There was no child psychiatry those days. But the NIMHANS also started child psychiatry later. So I said, I started reading, and I said, this sounds very fascinating. And I said, but how do I get into this field? How do I practice? How do I? So I started making my own way of trying to counsel these parents that no matter what, we should see how these children can improve, you know, in their own ways. Maybe give them little tasks to do, and that could be, everyone wants to have a sense of achievement, and give little things to our children. So some parents would come and accept it and do it. At the same time, I also was running at that time, the day I started to practice, I also started, I feel, to give back to the society, I used to run a free clinic for the Family Planning Association of India. There was an organization, and it had a center near Palace Guthali. I mean, just quite close to where I stay in Malaysia. And I used to say that I will run an under five clinic once a week there, just to counsel the parents about nutrition, well-being and stuff like that. And, you know, and that used to be a free, I said, something which simultaneously I thought I should do this in my life. So I used to run the family planning, and there I came across, you know, there was an opportunity for me even to talk to the underprivileged group of mothers to say that you can do something. And many times I've came across, you know, teenage, severely retarded girls, you know, who would come pregnant. They had no brain, but they would be the sexual abuse, and they were, and I used to really wonder, my God, how is she going to rear this child, you know, when she herself doesn't know how to look after herself. And those mothers would plead, do something, let her not have this. But, you know, the laws were not so bad, but if they were advanced, I was not doing the termination, and it was a family planning, so they would be, other colleagues of mine were the gynecologists. I said, can you not terminate this pregnancy for this girl who's suffering? They said, listen, it was legal, it's okay, but illegally we wouldn't do. And so many of them had these, it was heartbreaking for me. I said, this is going to be something which I want to do and find out more and more about it. And I started working, but no guidance from the country, because, and when I spoke to my professors in Delhi, and they said, are you mad? You're doing so well. Why do you want to venture into field? And I said, I don't know. I want to. So I said, how do I go about it? So, you know, how things fall into place. And I had to make a small living also. I was also married to an Air Force officer who was traveling, and I was... I came to Bangalore because of him. He belongs to Mangalore, and from north I shifted here. Otherwise, I would have been even the government service, probably doing a general, you know, DGHS or some job like that. But he said, no, I want to go back and settle. I said, okay, let me try. So I came in Bangalore, and that's how I settled in Bangalore. And then I said, how do we go about it? At that time, you wouldn't believe that the inspiring for me was to get this concept of social entrepreneurs from Ashoka Innovators of Public. Very at that time, there was William Drayton was a wonderful person who started something called the Ashoka Fellowship for Innovators of Public. And it was like a social entrepreneur. You know, you're not a making. I said, I just applied for it. Somebody told me that you might get a small honorarium and you can pursue what you want, and a part of the day you can keep aside. And somehow I got selected for being the Ashoka. I was one of the earliest fellows, you know, maybe the second or the third batch, I don't really remember, of being the, you know, it was the concept itself was so revealing and so beautiful to me. I said, I'm going to do this. And having got that small fellowship, which gave me the freedom to pursue what I wanted to. So I spent half my day. I just used to work for half a day in my pediatrics and slowly and started understanding this. And now the concept which I told the Ashoka, which was I said, everything has to be done very early in life. If you want to make a change in these children, we have to catch them early. That today, it's the first 1,000 days are considered the most, I mean, wonderful years where every learning happens, 90% of your brain grows. I didn't know all those at that time, but somehow felt by looking at and understanding that I should do this. So how to go about it? So the wonderful thing about this Ashoka Fellowship or the, you know, they have so much of faith in their fellows. You know, there is nothing like you have to submit a report of what you have done and accountability. I said that trust, when somebody trusts you so much, I said, my God, I have to do much more than what I committed for them to do. And that's the time I wrote my first book. It was called The Baby's First Year of Life. And it was published by the Tiki Case. It's just a 30, 40 page book, which was even translated into Tamil and also in Marathi. Believe me, this book gave me enough royalty to go to the US to pursue what I wanted to do to me. And lucky enough, when I from Maulana's had those days, 70% of my classmates, including some very good friends, were all in the US. They said, just come, you don't have to worry about your stay and we'll look after all that. Because, you know, we had limited money those days. You used to get some $300, $500 and, you know, you had to fend for yourself. It was difficult days, but, and that's how this whole thing started. And then I started understanding. I went to the US. I became, what they have is the American Academy of Cerebral Palsy and Developmental Medicine. With little work which I did, they gave me a membership there. And that's from there where I made my contacts of and some wonderful person like Dr. Martha Denkler, who's the professor emeritus in learning disability in Johns Hopkins. And then I met Charlene Butler, who was then the president. She was from Seattle. I did a lot of learning from Seattle. I met Dr. Michael Rothenberg, who was a child psychiatrist in Seattle. And they were so helpful and so wonderful. You know, they gave me... I remember when I went and I met them, they said, what do you want us to do? I said, see, I can't even afford journals. You know, those days there was, I said, can I have subscription to developmental medicine, pediatrics, child neurology? Dr. Michael Rockenberg wrote to all the publishers and said, a free copy has to be sent. And if any of them didn't have, he wrote to his colleagues, said, send her a copy of these journals to India, you know. Can you believe them? Some of them still send me? And that's how my learning point and everything I started. Now, this is a specialty which requires a team. As I was broading and making performers, and I said, I'm going to ask this question, I'm going to train them, or this, there, I started also to understand that everything from the West cannot be adapted here. You're culturally a very different person from the West. And it was at that time, there was a WHO workshop and I was there, and there was two people from Chennai. I still remember Professor Jay Chandran. He was a clinical psychologist who did a program called Portage, you know, which was the early intervention program. And he came back to India. And he got associated me with them and Mrs. Krishnaswamy. We started a parent-mediated intervention programs in 80s, putting it across, and really, it was called Upanayan. Upanayan in Sanskrit means lead on, which was a wonderful program. I used to take a train to Chennai every weekend, Friday night, come back on Sunday. My home support was wonderful. I'm so grateful to my parents, my mother and father. My father retired and they stayed with me. So my house, I had no responsibilities. And my children were so beautifully looked after because my father was an avid reader. My mother was a homemaker, better than me. So the kids used to, I still, my kids, if they want some food and thing, they'll ask my mother, not me. Me is only what should I do in life, and, you know, in some intellectual conversations and some books, maybe discuss something. I was not there for basic needs of giving them, you know, khana peena, and all that was done by my mother.
But so much happened. So much happened. And it was just that the purity of intent that you had in making a difference was so, so pristine that things just fell in place.
Yeah. Amazing.
Upanayan was meant for what kind of kids that did you devise this program?
So, no, I devised the program initially for intellectual disabilities. Then I learned about, at that time in the 90s, started coming this autism. I didn't even know how to spell it when I passed MD Pediatrics. No, we used to call it some static chronic encephalopathy. Nobody knew what was happening, you know. This became another, my God, today it's almost like a silent epidemic. You know, 1 in 30 children, the US is saying if I see 10 children in my clinic, 7 of them are with some kind of features of autism spectrum disorder. This became a big issue. But, you know, you can't do all this by yourself. You know, I'm so grateful to a young psychologist called, she just passed her MSc at that time, Savita. She's still with me, by the way. She was looking for a job and she came. I said, listen, I want to do this. Whatever money we make, we'll share. But I don't know where we will go. But if you're in the journey with me, join me. So I tell you, that girl was so beautiful and so wonderful. She came and joined me, you know. So now I had whatever I could devise. I could then have a colleague to implement it with the parents, because I was still doing some amount of general practice, because this doesn't bring you money, you know, and I had to keep myself going. And this was a part on, we used to, on a fixed day, 2-3 times a week, would sort of look into these kids, and then afternoon we'd spend with them understanding what is required. And Savita, who's today, I think, one of the best behavioral specialists we have in the country, I feel, because she is so good with those kids. She's with me for the last almost 30 years. So we devised so many things together. I would learn something, come back and say, Savita, we have to do this. We have to do this. And she was in game with me. So, you know, I'm so thankful to her. Otherwise, maybe it may not have been possible to do so much as I can. And then, so that was a turning point. In pediatrics, I started then addressing pediatricians that this is a problem. And then slowly the Academy of Pediatrics also started. There was a group of us who got interested. We formed a small childhood disability group in all over the country. I would go for these conferences. Then we started addressing the general pediatrician. Today, we have a huge chapter for neurodevelopmental pediatrics, and there's some young doctors who are taking it forward so beautifully. I feel so good when I look at it, that this is going to be a thriving specialty. And in the coming years, this behavioral medicine is going to stand against all your AI and chat GPT and all, can do many things. But I don't think it's going to help you to manage behavior. Which I'm telling all my youngsters who are doing this specialty, you guys are lucky. You won't be out of job, so don't worry. You know, you'll have fun. So that's
true, you know, because even for AI, it needs a prompt. You need to give the right prompt to ChatGPT to get your answer.
Yeah.
The prompt has to come from us. And my question is, again, taking you back, doctor, to answer those parents who had children with challenges when they would meet you, is what kind of was instrumental in pushing you in the direction of developmental pediatrics? When you got into the space, not many people were there. So what kept you going forward? Was it that immediately things kept falling in place, Ashoka Fellowship, all that came? What kept you motivated to do something where you don't have a precedent to look at, a road that has already been set? So in a way, pioneering work is tough.
You know, I don't know. Subconsciously, you know, my father used to say many things to us. He said, just being second to none. We used to laugh at him. What in the hell that mean, you know, second to none? I think it played on me that I'm going to develop a specialty for this country. So no matter what it takes me to do, what is going to be, I should be the first. After that, any number of people can do it. I don't care. Maybe they do it better than me also. I don't. To start that first, I want to do this, you know. So I started writing books. I started making a lot of address every conference in Indian Academy. I said, I'll only talk on these subjects. And many pediatricians started believing me a lot. But the practice itself, Rashmi, I want to tell you, as long as I was doing general practice and doing development, the competition was, I did not get so many referrals or people didn't allow me. So I have to give credit to my husband, late husband. He died young here. I came back. I was doing so well in general practice. The amount of money I earned in 80s, I'm not even doing it right now, you know, for them. So I came and told him, I said, you know, this is causing me a lot of this. Nobody is referring, you know, very rarely when they're so severely affected, when I can hardly do anything, you know, I'm just talking to the parents that we have to be kind and nice and empathetic and beyond that, you know, how to keep them going. I said, I want to see young, where to make a difference when they are capable of. So he told me something. He says, see, in life, you should do what you, he was a great person, but he said, you do what you want to do. You can live in a big gated community and have a whatever fancy car to drive by. You can also live comfortably and pursue what you want to do in life. So you think, you know, and I think my children were also very simple, though they went to Malaya Aditi school, but they were very grounded, I thought, you know. Today, both of them work in the developmental field, you know, in their own way, and which I feel very proud of, because I think we're making a difference to people. And that's what life should be all about, in my opinion. So then I got this confidence. I said, I quit. I told my, I'm not going to practice general. So I would send back, even if the child had a cold and cough, I could have written. They said, doctor, write a prescription. No way. I said, no. That's that doctor's job. He has had confidence and faith in me that I'll only do so much. And that paid a big dividend. I think my colleagues had a lot of faith in me. I will not take their patient away. I will not. And second principle, very strongly, I believe, I would not take A's child and give it to, because B, pediatrician, is my friend. Even though they're living in the vicinity of the child, very good in their job. I said, that's not my job. A is sent, I said, send back to A, you know, because they have faith in, why should I, who am I, you know, the question, who am I, is a big philosophical question. All of us have to answer even today. Who am I and what am I here for? Is a philosophy of life, which is, you know.
Yeah.
So that built in a lot of goodwill for me. There were very, very wonderful colleagues of mine, of my time, who the minute they would see somebody, they would send them to me. So it gave me an opportunity to study them. And then I went back again. Every time I would go I never left for a long time. I never studied in the US, but I would go and get a program or see, and could have the capability of understanding a lot of our own culture and adapting that program to our culture. And that I was I mean, that was my USP, I think. That I never copied everything. I think our culture is different. How do I do this with our parents? So many techniques they use in the West successfully, I feel, is not good for India. We're not geared to be like that. And why not?
Can you give an example, doctor, like one example of some cultural difference between...
Now we talk about this early intervention, you know, in your own culture, every child rearing practices is an intervention. Now today, I'll tell you, the brain development talks about that the child is born only with, you know, it's a good brain, which is capable of learning, but hearing, vision, you know, it has smell and touch. So that is a major, and they talk about what's called attachment bonding offer. In our culture, you know, mother who delivers a baby is given off from everything to be with the kid for the first 40 days or 50 days. They don't even allow her to come inside because she, I think, just bonds with the baby. Breastfeeds, sleeps, and it's an amazing thing. I said, why do we give this up? Now, for example, they put, you know, this, I don't know, they put bangles, you know, red and black, and it's nothing but the child's visual stimulation. You put an anklet for a child, it moves his leg at 3-4 months. Ta, ta, ta. It's called the cause and effect. I told the West, what we know 5,000 years ago, you're calling it, it's like taking this thing for turmeric, you know, patency. I said, we know all this. And all those songs we sing, Taramaya, and it's nothing but building social interaction with your child. So I would tell my parents, please do all these things with your kids, you know, they do this annaprasanam, you know, when the child is around, when it's ready to chew, they have a ceremony, and I'm sure, you know, where we start. What is the ceremony? Telling you now your child can eat solid food. It can chew. If the pair, they would be worried if the child doesn't eat, something is wrong, it's not chewing. Amazingly. Now, what audiometries you're talking about? You know, I remember in Tamil Nadu, we say, Sanjadamma. You know, the minute you sing, see the intonation pattern, we sing it in the same way. Sanjadamma, Sanjadu, Sanjakili. Everybody says it. The minute you say it, the child starts, you know, moving, saying, I know what you want me to do in that gestural vase. Now, I said, this is like an audiometer for you. In a village where you don't have hearing, if your child does this by saying, it can hear. But that's why it's following your so-called. So I did lots of these kind of practices with my parents using our child development strategies, you know. In the Vijayadashmi, they make you put, they make a child first write, you know, around 2-3. It's a wonderful fine motor skills, you know, you're writing on a, you know, they would put rice or a different piragi or whatever, you know, you don't use a slate. We just write on that, you know, the child is ready to school, Kapri. They say, yeah, now he is ready or she's ready to go to school. So I think I understood and bought in a lot of our child rearing practices into the system. So the parents could relate perhaps to what I was trying to say. I said, it's ingrained. If a child doesn't do all this, something is wrong. Get it to understand. And then came assessments, and, you know, I learned a lot from the West, which I must say even today, and the advanced child psychiatry, and, you know, all that is different ball game. But I'm just talking about how I got into this practice. Then I had more and more people believing in me, and they found it easier. You see, when you identify with something which is totally new to you, then you say, okay, let me practice. I'm not doing it. I said, granny also do it, father also do it, and, you know, be born with the kid, and, you know, play with them, and, you know, so which I think was good. I also found very difficult in our culture is by nature, we are very authoritarian. We won't follow what the older people say. You do this, one of the reasons why our mental health, I think, is in shambles, because a lot of them have highest country mental disorders, is because we are not allowing our children to express their emotions when they are young. we just, you know, brush it aside and say, no, do that. And say, you know, we don't allow them. No, that's not the way. You know, we are very authoritative. Do this, don't do this. Come here, sit here. That we have to do away with. We have to change these practices. It's happening slowly, but it's so there are faults also in our system. I mean, this thing is, but you know, it was so geared towards what the older people say, that you have to do what they, you cannot rebel. Elder.
Yeah.
This was also very difficult for me, you know. So slowly I told the parents, it's okay. Now, because they see, even today, the autism mothers, many young mothers will say by 1.5, 2 years, I know something is wrong with my child. It's not making look at me. It's not speaking. But the older elders in my house said, nothing, is running around beautifully. Your child is looking well. You just want to make a fuss, wait and watch. This wait and watch is a very bad thing. Because we, as I told you, we have to do everything in the first 1,000 days. So there are plus points and negative points. I think the plus point is what I used it. Negative point is what I'm working with.
So doctor, you started these centers years ago in the 90s and you started them going. At that time, the awareness may have been way less than what it is today. So when you started this, are there some initial stories that you have or anecdotes which made you or motivated you to believe that you are in the right direction?
No, the fact that, see, if I wasn't, I wouldn't grow. See, when I started it, the age of, I tell you my motivation, age of referral by pediatrician used to be 5 years and 6 years. Very little I could do for the children. You know, but today I have some pediatricians who wait 9 months will say, go to, in Bangalore, they'll say, something is wrong with your child. Go, just go and see Dr. Nandini. You know, I mean, they would say that, they say that your child, see, I mean, what is the beautiful thing? Convincing the parents, you know, from that age for them to, even, I think my colleagues are also making a big difference. They are also working on it. But it would be nice. I still have only, I feel very sad that all pediatricians are not monitoring the milestones, or the parents are also not paying attention to this. See, the only milestones they are very concerned about, which is most useless milestone, is a gross motor. I mean, useless in the sense, it doesn't help me to learn. Like sitting, standing, walking, because it's visible to them. If a child doesn't walk by 1.5 years, they go running to the pediatrician. But what is the most important milestone to monitor is the social milestone. Child who doesn't make an eye contact, doesn't look at, give you a back and forth smile, doesn't have a you know, share a joy with you and say, daddy, baba, look, you know, mama, or point to a thing. See, these are crucial for learning. They want them to, see, academics has got so much importance in our country. That is the, if a child is good in school, means he's good in everything else. Not so. Today, I have parents, I mean, I had other day one 17-year-old child with autism. The parents came to me, all the way from pretty far off. He says, my child is doing excellent in school. But doctor, he doesn't go out of the house. He doesn't have a single friend. All that time he's alone. How do I solve this? See, it is the socialization which should be addressed in these children, which is not understood so well. By the, and that's the greatest problem. It's a social, they don't monitor social milestones. They don't monitor communication milestones. If you don't monitor these two, you can't pick up children with autism and all early. So this is, I wish pediatricians would monitor social and communication milestones, you know, rather than just the physical alone. Or when parents come with a problem, we should give utmost importance, because when they notice itself means something must be grossly wrong, or they're comparing it to another child they have or seen in somewhere, and they're saying, child, something is not doing well. I wish, this is my request actually, if you can project it to all the pediatricians across the country, that please monitor social communication milestones right from birth. And to do this, I even developed an app. It's, you know, I mean, that's another story. I have to come to you to say that how people make a difference in your life when you're working, as you said, as, I mean, we were working in these centers. I told you again and again, I can't do this alone. Like how Savita came into my life. There's another wonderful lady who runs the parent-mediated center in Sahakar Nagar, which we have, which is one of the best PN-mediated centers in this country, is by another very good educationist who came with a child with a special need to me. It was so severely affected. I told her, I don't think I can do anything. Like a four-year-old child came, almost she carried him like this in two arms, you know. So she said, no, but even then, this is the last place I've come. You have to do something. This is my son. So I said, okay. Then I called my therapist. I said, at least let's give a stable breathing to this child. He was not even able to breathe. You know, this child bloomed to an extent. I would say he would start recognizing. If you say, Dr. Nandini is coming, she'll say, mother would say, he'll give me a smile. Then she came one day to me and said, doctor, I have a small desire. I said, what is it? Can I do? She says, I know my child can never go to a school. Can never, but is it possible that I am an MSc, MEd, she had such a lot of qualification. You can use me to start something by which you can. I said, amazing. What are you wasting your time? I said, do a course in autism with me. And she started the center in Sahakar Nagar. It's called Sangamitra, Early Intervention Center, with just two children. And she said, I will take my son there. I'll take a help who will look after it, not interfere with my work. But when the child has, they have lunch together, I want my child to be with the other children. What a beautiful, brilliant way. You know? And that's how, now that center is got every program on that earth. You know, I mean, I'll send you an initiative. They have music therapy, they have art therapy, they have toilet training, they have sexual development program, they have early intervention, they have just for severely and moderately retarded started, they have started a pre-vocational training, they have an open school curriculum when the school where children can't go to. So they have a sibling, you know, we are also aware siblings of another child, a normal neurotypical sibling, also feels so lost because the parents, they feel they don't have enough attention. They get into, so we have every program now, A to Z. It was all because of my colleagues also who work with me, you know, my admins who handle everything, Saraswati and Vajanti, you know, they are there for the, I mean, it's like a, it's a teamwork, I should say. It's not you alone. I'm not alone in this. And these people are as dedicated, I would say even more than me, to bring about this change in these children. I feel a good part that I initiate a lot of things and I work with them, I study them and help them, but they also implement it.
Now, Doctor, these centers for child developmental disabilities that you have, how many centers do you have in Bangalore and where are they?
I have a Center for Child Development Disabilities. It's greatly supported by my family trust. That's why we could go. It's a very cost-effective center. It's called a Sukhumvit Trust, which is a again, started by my sister and my brother-in-law, who initially gave a lot of support to, for, you know, to, otherwise it would have been difficult. As I told you, in days, because children could hardly pay. We wouldn't, the center, even today, does not refuse. People who pay, pay for it. It stands alone. It was a not-for-profit organization. I don't believe in free services and charity too. Nobody values that like me. Yeah, if those who can pay fair the full amount of money for it, those who can't, we give a lot of concession and see that nobody goes without treatment. That's our philosophy here. And so Center for Child Development and Disability is a unit of this. So we have two centers for that. And then Sangamitra is a standalone unit, which I started with this lady. It's a parent-mediated center. The parents run that center. That shift change which has come from parents being locked inside their houses, not coming out. Today, take initiative to run a center is, I think, I feel, few of my lifetime achievements. Yeah. And then around 2017, another wonderful gentleman came into my life called Karthik Krishnamurthy, who was a med lab. He's an IT guy from, I don't know how he walked into my clinic one day. And then I just told him that I think this field requires a lot of very little knowledge and needs an IT support. And I think we should take it across. And that's where he said, yes, doctor. You know, I didn't know whether, then I wrote him, are you serious? He said, see, I can never pay for this software. And, you know, it's so expensive to develop any program in the IT sector, you know, funders. I don't have any funders. And I said, I have no money, but I'll give you my domain knowledge, which I have plenty. You know, he just took it. He says, okay, let's form a limited liability partnership company. You're the domain expert, I'll be the IT expert. I think he has spent a lot more money than I have done, youngster. And we have set up this thoughtsguide.com. I tell you, the amount of program today, you know, we have developed a home-mediated program, children with autism sitting across the world. I'm telling you, I have children from France to Germany to UK, Canada, Abu Dhabi. Many of them did home-mediated program, you know, with us. We have online support for all those people. Then we have had a free Track and Act as an app, which we have, where parents have to just enter. It's a free app. Enter the name, the date of birth, that is the full term, expected date of birth. It will answer questions where you can monitor milestones, you know, by answering yes or no. It gives you an idea whether your child is in the right direction or not, and available in Tamil, Kannada, Hindi, and English. I have another app called Dolphin. Dolphin is an acronym for developing opportunities for parent help, infant nurture. That the first 1,000 days from the day the child is born, every day one activity will come to the phone to develop a child, giving them ideas on sensory stimulation, sleep, nutrition, brain development, getting to know if the child, you know, monitoring milestones. They just pay 500, 600 rupees. Again, available in Tamil, Kannada, Hindi, and English. We're now developing another program for 3 to 7 years old children who are not learning and motoric, running around. They cannot be diagnosed as attention deficit, cannot call them learning problem, but yet they have some problem. So can we develop those skills? SMILES is an acronym for social, motor planning, intelligence, emotions, and sensory, you know. So we give activities, the parents do it. You know, it's again, very cost-effective way of giving parents to say, these are what you have to develop. If your child has not got a diagnosis, don't wait for it. Start. So Thoughts Guide has taken the program to all over the world. You know, so we, that again, it's, if Karthik has not come into my life, I couldn't have done that. Because even today we have a limit. We are still the angel funders. It's both of us. It doesn't make a single penny, you know, in the sense, it's, the programs are so, kind of, he says, your programs are so big, it costs a lot of money. So whatever money we make out of scope, parents have to pay for it, you know, some program, it just goes into development of programs till today, you know, for a, so, but I'm happy that we are able to realize and give help to so many people, so many parents, you know, which is the joy with us. So that's how they, so then we have, and then we also have a kind of a small therapy center in Indiranagar. Trots Guide for everybody else, and there are these 3-4 centers in Bangalore.
And when it comes to children in the autism spectrum, how old are the kids who come to you?
Yes. The youngest is 4-5 months. Oldest is, we only work till 15 years.
So even if they come in by the time the child is 11 or 12, you can still make a difference.
Yeah. We have a program for them. And I think every child must get the opportunity to live his or her best in her capability. Even if they're severely affected, they still have some joy left in them. They have some capabilities left in them. And I think we as human beings should nurture that for that child, whatever it may be, you know, however small it may be. And they may have millions of behavioral issues which we can handle. Behavioral issues come in because you have not given them the opportunity. The minute you give me an opportunity, why will I have behavior problems? At whatever level. So our job, which we do wonderfully in our centers, I would say, is to identify the base level which they are functioning, analyze the behavior, give them an appropriate program, tell the parents, you cannot be realistic in your expectations. Don't compare. You have another sibling who's good, give, let that child do your fulfill. But this child needs so much, you know, for, and this is what they can do, you know, for, and it's not their fault. I said, they didn't come asking for it. I always tell them, did the child come asking that? No, every child wants to go to school, every child wants to play, every, but it's unfortunate. Neither you or they are responsible for this. Having understood this, let's do the best and bring joy in. We also have a wonderful program for well-being of parents. The next person in my life was come in, who did, was a young developmental pediatrician called Kirtika Rajaraman, who did a fellowship with me. today is my colleague, amazing person. She has brought so much to the table of taking all my programs forward, you know, parent well-being program I want to talk about. Understand that when we, the parent who has a child, you know, your best thing which you're looking for in your life is your child. You know, you have all aspirations, goals, you want to dress them up, you want them to send best to school, that everything gets shattered when they have a child with neurodiversity. Now, the parents undergo a lot of trauma themselves, whether with anger, disappointments, you know, to the, they undergo various stages of dismissal, you know, till they come to acceptance, and they go itself is a long process for them. And rightly, maybe, even when they come, when we work as what we say as a co-regulator, because I feel some of the best programs are shown me very good results is when the parents and the caregivers and their extended family gets involved in the therapy. You see, then the child has much beyond expectations of improvement happens because of the acceptance of these children, and the parents also have learned how to adapt and have a realistic expectations. Now, for that, the parents have to come as a co-regulator with that kind of a mindset. Now, this is also very difficult, because constantly our inner voice or the parents' thoughts is always telling me that, oh, my child is not going to do anything, he's not going to school, he's going to be useless. You know, this negative thoughts doesn't make you a good co-regulator. So we have a very nice parent-mediated program. All my programs are evidence-based program. What we mean by evidence-based is, in medical, when we head these kinds of programs, we have to show that it makes a difference. It's based on the theory of acceptance commitment theory. ACT is a very big psychological theory. If only when I accept, then can I bring about some flexibility in my understanding of my intelligence that I want to work with these children in a way. So for that, and we tell the parents to have extreme degree of compassion for your own self. Because if you're not happy, what happiness can you bring in anyone else's life? That's my tagline. Huh? So, and I tell this to parents, you need to enjoy yourself. So what? This is one catastrophe. But then you have a husband, you have other children, your family, your friends. You're neglecting all of them. For what joy? So this came as a wonderful program. Today, the 50 mothers who come every day at Sangamitra, you know, I can see this change in them. Today, if you want to do a potluck lunch, you know, it gives me some joy. Today, they are very good. They, you know, they work with their children. They're happy. They're home. So the parent wellness is a very important component of any of the program which we do with these children. Because if they cannot bring in, you know, like we say, from the heart to do it. You may do it superficially, but that's not going to help. So this, again, is a very important component of the program which we run, is parent wellness program. And now the parents themselves have formed a group called Maitri. Many of them, some of them are psychologists. They're taking over the program and running it online, you know, which is, so the multiplication is when the society gets involved in, and I'm trying my best to involve the society, go beyond. I worked with the doctors, now we are working with the parents, and
the right plugins have come in at the right time.
Yeah, and, yeah. So that's, I don't know, I think it just happened.
Yeah.
Maybe destiny, we don't know.
But then when the pandemic struck, healthcare was worst hit, and children, especially in the autism spectrum, were worst hit because they did not have the interaction that they normally had.
I know. See, this is, you know, it's at one side, that is true, that they couldn't go out. But the second part of it is, in my parent, the parents were available to the children all the time. You know, it was eye-opener that many parents realized how they didn't know. And I tell you, we ran, because of the Sangamitra kind of, because we had 50 parents coming in every day. Those 50 parents had online sessions, you know, and they could even relate and tell the others that, It's important. You see, what we blame the pandemic, even parents today below 2 years, 3 years, they say, oh, my child, it was only 2 years old before pandemic. You couldn't go out to play and go to school. I said, below 2 years, no child goes to school or goes out to play. You had a beautiful chance to interact. Instead of doing that, you put this child in front of a mobile, which is another thing. By the time the child is 6 months old, for eating, the child needs a mobile. For listening to rhyme, the child needs a mobile. For seeing cartoon, I said, this is something you're taking away full wiring from the social sector. Where was the need? You could have, tried to play with your kids. Parents don't know how to play with their children. This is another thing. Having all these child rearing, which is all lost these days. See, I think in the olden days, I always say join family. No matter what the adults may have differences and they would have fought, they may not, but the children had a good time because some aunt, uncle, they had this social connect with them. They could, attachment with them, that bonding with them, by which they survived all their traumas of, that's what, they said, the ruptured relationship, even if you have there with your caregivers, if you have somebody in your life who supports that, could be a teacher, could be a stranger, could be a neighbor, you can survive this drama often. That in the nuclear families and parents, many of these people leaving their town and their another town, they don't have that kind of support system, has played a lot of, it has got its own disadvantages, particularly for children where they're dependent on the caregivers to really give them that kind of support. And when they are not able to do it, then the children don't get such a good deal in their life. So this is in the pandemic. It was a realization for me that parents don't know how to interact with the kids. They've lost their childhood in them. They don't. I said playing with children requires a lot of hoo ha. You say, oh my God, that's so exciting. Come on, let's. They say, how to do all this? They're so. I said, no. You have a hype. You have to be animated. You have to bring the joy. Children are like that. Become a cartoon. They are seen. I said, you sing the rice. Why are you putting that rhyme for them? It takes them time to change. So this was, I feel, the worst part of the pandemic. Then the pandemic alone, but particularly for young children below 3 to 5 years, they could have done a great job. Parents could have read with them. They could have played with them. They had a great opportunity to interact with the older children. Maybe that they were affected. And of course it was affected. Even young children were affected, but we could have compensated a lot if only we really thought about it. And unfortunately, none of us had this experience to guide them also. They come on, do this, for it came as a rude shock for us to realize that the parents were also very ill-equipped of dealing with the children. I always tell them, but you all Google now for everything, which is the best restaurant in town, where is the best sale going on. I really make fun of my parents. I said, you could have Googled a little bit how to play with one two-year-old, three-year-old, they're giving you 101 activities. Honestly, anything the Google tells you. But I said, you don't Google for milestones, you don't Google for what? I said, why? Listen, I don't know. It's not in their mind. What's not in your mind is not. So now I keep consciously telling them, I said, ask about, child development. But this is a need of our Rashmi. We need to bring a good child development below 3 years. 90% of your brain develops. You develop your, neuroplasticity, not that even in your attachment, bonding, the way the parenting in the early years reflects what we are when we grow up, what we bring to the table as parents. In case you have not done this, I always say change a little bit. Otherwise, we have to give a lot of importance to the first 3 years of life, and that includes wellness of in the last trimester of pregnancy is when the brain develops very rapidly and a lot of emotional development starts, scientifically. And the mother who has a very stressful pregnancy at that time lands up with children with problematic behavior, premature babies, and whole lot of things. So are we treating our young mothers, our mothers with lots of fun activity, you know, happiness in the last trimester. I always hear this, you know, mother-in-law's trauma, you know, a lot of punitive husbands, and all this is affecting the children, you know, which are going to be born, particularly the boys more than the girls. And it's such a male-centered boy, you know, kind of, what should I say, culture we have, that boys are. And I say, you're not bringing in good boys. I said, give for that, you have to look after the mother well so that they grow up to be a wonderful human being. So these are some, you know, a lot of scientific evidences now coming up with all this. And how to translate this into our culture and tell the people that be good to this mother. Because poverty itself is one thing which ruins many things, you know, for them. Top of this, this kind of treatment to the women is, we are going to have lots of children in that kind of sector who are going to be affected. And that's really a lot of them, and it's not good for our country.
Yeah, that's like solid food for thought. And as we reach the end of the conversation, Doctor, you spoke about the pandemic, what could have been done. But personally, for you, what were your reflections from the pandemic? Because
my reflection, you know, I must tell you, during pandemic, I used it for the best time. I got both my hip replacement done. You know, I got one replacement with a great difficulty. I said, oh God, you know, I said, everyone was telling me what God. After the between the first and second pandemic, it takes about 6 months to recover from them.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's a long So my wonderful orthopedic surgeon said, see, you know, I'll get you on hospital. I definitely not give you COVID. Hospital is empty. And you know, why don't you, your second hip also needs it, you know, whether after 2 years, why didn't you get first? I told him, no. Then he said, by the time you finish, your COVID will be over, you'll be ready for work. So that was amazing. So I spent my time. Now, during that pain and all, what I did, I developed the Smiles program with my colleagues. We developed that, you know. It's a huge program, which is just getting loaded now. We have done the testing. And
all available on the app, is it?
Yes. It's all ready. But, we are, you know, we do a lot of testing, you know, in the app.
Yeah.
That's going on for the last 1 year, you know. If everything is all right, I think my... another month or two, it should be available for the Smile. So Smiles with my colleagues and all of us worked, you know, it's a huge, you know, putting almost like so many activities and designing it and getting a picture drawn for it from an artist. It's a huge program, you know. So
this
we worked.
This is something that any child, parent who has access.
Anybody, to any child child between ages of 3 to 8.
Oh.
Don't build academic skill, build social skill, build motor planning, and also understand every child has something, maybe some tendency he's good at. If you discover that during this age, you know, that, oh, he's playing this, motor planning is good, maybe he's going to be a good sportsman. Maybe he's going to be a good musician. It could be a, you know, and I always tell parents, keep this going for them along with academics. Find something that the child enjoys. And of course, many children want to do things they're not, but and they're good at, you know, push them. And this can be used by any kid, but the child who has even mild problem is going to help them even better. So that's what I did during the pandemic. So it took care of my pain also and made my, pandemic was a blessing for me because I didn't have to go to clinic and I was
recovered. I'm not surprised with somebody so positive. Only you can see the bright side of even the pandemic.
Two hip replacements done, Smiles program developed. What more do I want, Rashmi? I thought it was amazing.
True. And as we reach the conclusion, 3 life lessons, Dr. Nandri, that you would like to leave us.
Enjoy every day as it comes. I always tell everybody, the past is so fast, you know. The second which has gone has come, it's become past. So we dwell a lot on our past, you know, and that we dwell on doing and ruining our health. I said, it's not going to bring us joy because that time is never going to come back. Forget it. Wherever we are today, let's work today for that future tomorrow. Don't think of the parent always, will he pass high school? Will he go to? I said, I don't know. Why are we worried about that? We'll take when it comes. Today you lay foundation for that is one thing, which I feel very positive about. And I feel it's always nice, the joy of giving. And I feel the joy of gratitude to my colleagues and my friends who kept me and gave me, they would Xerox books and send it, courier to me from the US. I have lots of friends. Friends galore. I'm going from my schoolmates to my college mates to my other friends. I have lots of friends who have stood by me. And I'm so thankful to them, So I think in life we should cultivate relationships. And my two daughters, who are amazing themselves, both of them. One, of course, is living in Australia, and she herself has got her own recognition. And Anuradha Munko, she works with the gender issues, in which the younger one is another lawyer here. And as I said, more of a lawyer for the underdogs and poor people than she had. But they're very happy, and that's, I think, is the greatest gift I have. And I said, wish well for your children. Don't make them do what you have to do, and share something of yours with others. I think that gives a great joy. I'm very happy at my age of 74 now, and I still feel I have a lot of things to do.
The living life to the full, absolutely. Having pure intention, joy and gratitude. Amazing way to live your life, Dr. Nandini Munkur. Such an honor having you on You and I with Rashmi Shetty.
Thank you, Rashmi. And I remember you very vividly. Thank you for remembering me,
Honor always, Doctor. You've always inspired me. And I love the ease with which you do what you do. And I think that's the secret of loving what you are blessed with.
So, yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you.
With that, we come to the end of this weekly quest of You and I with Rashmi Shetty. Do let us know if you know people who make the world beautiful. Write in to rashmi.thethirdeye@gmail.com. That is rashmi.thethirdeye@gmail.com. Come. Let's explore this amazing world together, both you and I.